The views and opinions expressed in Cold and Missing are exclusively those of the hosts. All parties mentioned are considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Cold and Missing also contains adult themes and languages. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm your host, Allie McLaughlin-Sulkowski.
And I'm your co-host, Eli Sulkowski.
And this is Cold and Missing, where we cover cold cases
and missing person cases.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cold and Missing. I'm your host, Allie.
And I'm your co-host, Eli. Welcome back, everyone.
I just wanted to say thank you at the top. This week, we had an update on our podcast hosting website, but we were able to pull international reviews for the first time. And there are so many very kind reviews coming from all over the world that I was able to read for the first time. So thank you so much to everyone. Like, it was overwhelming.
Yeah, I really enjoyed listening to them. Allie read them off to me, and they just bring us so much joy to hear back from y'all, to know that you're listening, and to know that you're just upholding what Cold and Missing is all about, which is getting these cases out there and getting some name recognition around them. So, yeah, it's great to hear from y'all.
But I thought we would just go ahead and jump into this week's case. We are on episode 121 this week, and we are on a cold case.
All right, let's do it.
So just as a bit of a content warning at the top, this case does have mentions of sexual assault. Today, we are talking about the cold case of Terry Marie Howell. And this takes place in July of 1980 in Knoxville, Kentucky. But first, a little bit about Terry. Terry is 24 years old in 1980. She's a single mom to a young 4-year-old boy, Kenny. Terry and her young son live with her mother in Owensboro, Kentucky. Growing up, Terry was the only girl with 4 brothers. She was tough, but also the sweetest person you could ever meet, according to her family and friends. Those that knew her and loved her said that she was even-tempered and didn't want to trouble anyone. She was a really sweet woman and a wonderful mother. And now, a timeline of events. On Thursday, July 24th, 1980. It's unclear exactly what Terry was getting up to throughout the day, but what we do know is in the evening hours, her and a girlfriend, Janice, decided to go out dancing. Thursday night turned into an early Friday morning, July 25th. Now, there are some things that are kind of unclear in this case, and one of those things is if Terry and Janice were bar hopping that evening or if they spent all night in one location. It sounds like to me that they were bar hopping, kind of going place to place, but the girls did not have a car on this evening out. Eventually, the two of them end up at the Hasty Tasty. The Hasty Tasty was packed with activity. This was a popular spot since it did have a 24-hour kitchen. Several bars and nightclubs are in the area that kept the Hasty Tasty busy. They also had their own dance floor so the good times could keep rolling. So again, the girls could have spent all night here or they could have just ended up here. To me, it does seem like this is the last spot that they wanted to go so that way they could grab a bite to eat. Another thing that I had trouble pinning down is the exact timing of events. So back in 1980, when this was originally being reported, the next sequence of events was said to happen like between 2:30 a.m. and about 3 a.m. However, now when the story is reported, this time shifts to around 1 a.m. So the sequence of events is all the same, but there could be some discrepancy in the timing. For me personally, and for the sake of the timeline today, I'm going to go back to what was originally reported in the 1980s and use that timing. But just keep that in mind that there could be some variation in these times. But the sequence of events appears to be correct. So at around 2:45, Terry and her friend order food at the Hasty Tasty. It's here that Terry starts talking to a man. He's a white man in his late teens or early 20s, around 5'10" with a slender build. Terry and the man talk about people that they both know in Ohio County, Kentucky. That's where Terry had gone to high school, and these two seem to know some of the same people. But it seems that Terry did not know this man before this night. As 3 a.m. rolled around, Terry's friend Janice gets up from the table to go use a payphone. They were ready to head home, but neither one of them had a car. They had been dropped off for their night out. When Janice calls their ride, the phone line is busy. She hangs up, waits a few minutes, and tries again. She still gets the busy signal. So she heads back to the table to tell Terry that their ride didn't pick up. It's at this point that the man that Terry had been talking to offers them a ride home. The two decide to take it. Around 3 a.m., Terry, Janice, and the man were seen getting into a light or pale blue two-door Ford sedan, possibly a 1965 or 1966 model. The girls got into the car, and as soon as the doors were shut, the car sped out of the parking lot. To take the girls home, the car should have turned right out of the parking lot, but instead he took a left. The man eventually gets on US 60 and is heading out of town. The two women tried to let him know that he was going the wrong way. When he ignores them, they start screaming at him. He continues to ignore them and keeps driving the wrong way. At the intersection of Kentucky 144 and Reed Road, Janice, who was sitting on the passenger side, jumped out of the moving car. There was another car right behind them that had to swerve to not hit her as she came out of the vehicle. The other car didn't stop, and the car with Terry and the man didn't stop either. Janice wasn't seriously hurt when she fell, but she was pretty banged up. She had to walk about a mile to a payphone to call her sister to pick her up. She goes to the hospital to get her cuts and scrapes cleaned, but Janice doesn't alert anyone about Terry until later. About 12 hours later, so it's still Friday, July 25th. Around 4:30 in the afternoon, a volunteer firefighter notices smoke coming from an abandoned farmhouse on the Cammy Nix farm. The farmhouse was just outside of Knoxville, Kentucky on Free Silver Road. When firefighters arrive at the scene and put out the fire, they discover Terry's body had been badly burned inside. The killer had brought Terry's body into the abandoned farmhouse and placed her on a mattress on the floor. Pieces of paper and cardboard box were piled around her head, and paper was placed near her feet. A match had been used to light the fire. Police are called, and they begin to process the scene. Foul play is immediately suspected. Police also pick up on a trail of discarded items of Terry's, starting with her shirt that was about 100 feet from the farmhouse. One of Terry's shoes, her pants, some medicine, and her empty purse were all found along Kentucky 1389, which leads to Hawesville, Kentucky. Her purse was the only item actually found in Hancock County. All these items are processed, but police are not able to lift a fingerprint. On Saturday, July 26th, Terry's autopsy is conducted. Ultimately, the medical examiner determines that Terry was already dead when the fire was lit. In addition, they're able to rule out most causes of death except for strangulation or suffocation. Police suspect she died of one of these two. It's not revealed until years later, but the autopsy also confirms that Terry had been sexually assaulted. The medical examiner sends samples for testing to complete the report, but after the physical autopsy is complete, Terry is buried that evening as a Jane Doe. As her mother will say years later, quote, "They didn't even wait 3 days." End quote. That same night, Terry's mother had been increasingly worried about her daughter. She never came home after she went out on Thursday, which was very unlike her, and she felt uneasy after she saw that a dead body was found in Knoxville. After not being able to get a hold of her daughter, she calls the police to report her missing. As news spreads that Terry is missing, Janice comes forward to police to tell them what happened to her. Once police get Terry's name, they use dental records to confirm that it was her body inside the farmhouse. They also ask her family and friends to confirm that the blouse that they found was hers as well, which they do. On Sunday, July 27th, police confirm that the body she saw in the news was in fact her daughter's. Her mother gets to work arranging a graveside service since Terry had already been laid to rest. On Tuesday, July 29th, police say that they do not have a suspect, but have interviewed several people on the case. Police do believe that Terry was killed not long after her friend jumped out of the car. It is likely that the killer drove around with her body in his car looking for a place to get rid of it. On Thursday, July 31st, police hold a press conference. They release a sketch of a man that gave Terry and her friend Janice a ride. Police announce that they would like to talk to the man, and that while at this time he hadn't done anything wrong, they need to clear him as part of their investigation. Police are also asking that the person who was driving behind them when Janice jumped out of the car to please call police. They stress that the driver is not in trouble, that they just want to know what they saw. Police believe that the man lives in Ohio County since he knew so many of the same people as Terry from Ohio County. They also scour Hancock County since this is where the trail of Terry's belongings was headed. They believe that he tossed the items out of the car while he was driving east on Kentucky 1389. Once police release the composite sketch, lots of tips come through. But nearly a week later, on Wednesday, August 6th, it's been 12 days since Terry's murder, and none of the tips have led to anything. Sheriff Harold Taylor says, quote, "We've checked out 64 people, but zilch," end quote. Later in August, the lab results come back from Terry's autopsy. She had no drugs in her system and barely had any alcohol. Police say that it was likely she had one beer several hours before her murder, but that was it. After this, Terry's case appears to go cold. The next update is in April of 1983, so it's been almost 3 years since Terry was murdered. Terry's mother believes that she had been killed due to revenge. She says, quote, "It had to be revenge, but for what? I don't know. That's the one that bothers me the most about the murder," end quote. Police also say that Janice had been questioned thoroughly by police. She had passed 2 polygraph tests, 2 psychological stress evaluations, and had been hypnotized. Through all of this testing, police feel confident that she is telling the truth. That's how we have so many details about that night. In 2004, so it's been 24 years since Terry's murder, and her son is grown and starting his own family at this time. His wife, Penny, also takes up Terry's case. Penny says, quote, "We're still holding out hope. We've talked and wonder if the whole story will come out. We don't think it's just a random act. We think there's more to it," end quote. In 2009, so it's been 29 years, and police announced that they are reopening the case in hopes of finally closing it. With the evolution of DNA, police are now looking to see if they have any options to test evidence that they have for DNA. Police are hoping that if they are able to pull a DNA profile, that the suspect would likely already be in the database from another crime. Police also asked for the public's help. A detective working the case says, quote, "What we're hoping is anyone who may have been around the Hasty Tasty on July 24th and 25th, who may know anything about what happened to Terry Howell. We're hoping one person's information might be enough to bust this case wide open for us. We certainly like to have justice prevail, and for the family's sake also." In 2015, it's been 35 years since Terry's murder, and Terry's mother still holds out hopes for answers. But she is forced to face the reality of her situation. She says, quote, "40-year-old murders are solved, but I get the feeling this is not going to be," end quote. Terry's mother passed away in 2021 without knowing who killed her daughter and why. Terry's son, Kenny, and her daughter-in-law, Penny, have gotten a divorce, but Penny still champions Terry's case. She wants to keep the case in the media for her children, Terry's grandchildren, who she never got to meet, but also for Terry's mother, who had worked so hard on the case. But that is all we know about the murder of Terry Howell. So if you know anything about the murder of Terry Howell in July of 1980, please call the Davis County Sheriff's Office at 270-685-8444. So that is the case of Terry Marie Howell.
I loved hearing that Terry was so kind and sweet and caring and gentle as she was and came from a family of 4 brothers. I have a big family, so I understand the dynamic a little bit, but I don't know, I love that she came from a big family of brothers.
Yeah, I thought that was, like, a fun detail, and I thought it told a lot about Terry, actually. Like, anyone who has a lot of brothers but is the only girl, like kind of knows what it's like. So I enjoyed that fact about her as well.
She was also a mother and a single mother. You know, I know people who are single parents and they are the hardest working people I know and the most exhausted, and they're incredible people. And she sounded the same. And I'm so sad that her son was robbed of a mother, because, you know, he so deeply deserved that. And everyone, you know, in her life, you know, she should be here.
Yeah, I think something that broke my heart in a way that I didn't expect in this case is that, you know, Terry was headed out for like a girls' night, it felt like a night to have fun, to dance. And, you know, I wonder if she had a lot of nights like that as, like you said, a single mom. Like, this was likely a treat for her. So the fact that it went as horrible as a night out can go, like, that's heartbreaking in and of itself, because this should have just been like a fun, joyous, kind of carefree night for her.
Yeah. All women deserve that when they go out at night. All people deserve that. But it's just extra heartbreaking because she probably didn't get the chance to go out very often. And since we're talking about her going out, the first thing I wrote down about the timeline was just the actual time that they were out. And it sounded so late to me. And I know I'm not old, but I feel so old when I say that midnight is super late. The times that they were out, I know those times to be that nothing good is happening. You know, nothing good happens after 12 a.m. And as you started to share the timeline, unfortunately, I feel like I could sense where it was heading.
Yeah, the timeline, again, is one of those tricky things. In 1980, it's reported this was all kind of happening around 3 a.m. Today, it said it happened around 1 a.m. So while 2 hours doesn't feel like a ton of time, at that hour, it does feel like a lot. Like 1 a.m. feels way different than 3 a.m.
At the part of the timeline when the women have left the bar and it's around 2:45, could you circle back on what those details are?
Yeah, so Terry and Janice were seen in the parking lot. This was happening in 1980. It was reported around 3 a.m., getting into a light or pale blue two-door Ford sedan. So it was Terry, Janice, and then the guy from inside the Hasty Tasty.
Something I immediately thought when you were talking about the conversation that Terry was having with this guy that she didn't know, but supposedly they had a lot of people in common, I was very suspicious, and I just assumed that he was probably lying to create a sense of safety between the two. If he could echo her and say enough about, oh, do you know so-and-so? And he, you know, could improvise a little bit. I think because of the time, you know, it's late, you're tired. I know they weren't drinking a ton, but still, you know, it's the middle of the night. If he's saying he knows the people that she is saying that she knows, who is she to assume that he's lying? You know, there's no Facebook, there's no cell phones. I assume that it was a tactic to create safety so he could eventually do what he did.
Yeah, I thought about that as well with the guy, like, basically just echoing back whatever she would say, or like just giving vague enough details that they could apply to anybody. Because it seems like if they really did have people in common, at some point they should have been able to find this guy in the Hasty Tasty that gave them the ride. It feels like, you know, they could have gone through, you know, her graduating class through that high school and like shown everybody the composite sketch. Like, do you know this person? Like, maybe that was done and it led nowhere, but it feels like if they really did have acquaintances in common, somebody would have made a connection with the suspect, Terry, how they would all know each other. So that's kind of my thoughts on that.
What happens afterwards? After they have their conversation with him is truly the stuff of nightmares. And it will never not shock me that people commit crimes like this. I do have a question about Janice, and this isn't to place any blame or point fingers. I'm just curious if you knew why she waited.
I don't know why Janice waited to go to police. I assume she was just in a state of shock, and, you know, I try not to pass judgment on folks who maybe were just coming out of like a really terrifying situation. But at the same time, I do recognize that it's like, why didn't she go? Like, I, you know, like there's like this anguish of like, oh, like, ugh. But at the same time, like, I try to leave like enough room in my head and heart that like she had just gone through something really crazy too.
Yeah, ultimately, all anger can be, you know, funneled back to the person who committed this crime because it shouldn't have happened.
For sure, because it's like, how dare he even put these women in that position to begin with?
I don't enjoy continuing to segue more into the mistreatment of women in this case or of Terry, but her being buried 3 days after her body was found, maybe it's because I don't understand the laws at the time, but still that it feels, even if those were the laws at the time, they shouldn't have been.
Yeah, it was actually less than 3 days. So they found Terry's body on a Friday. Her autopsy was done Saturday morning and she was buried Saturday evening. So almost in the span of 24 hours of her body being found, she was laid to rest. And yeah, that's one of those things. I don't know exactly why that was done. I don't know if it, like you said, it was the law at the time, but it seems almost callous in how fast to not even give like families the opportunity to maybe come forward and claim her. That was shocking. In all of my research in these cases, I've never seen a burial happen that fast.
Something else that I also found surprising was the treatment of Janice afterwards. And I understand that due diligence needs to happen, but from my understanding, you know, she was covered in scrapes and bruises and had gone to the hospital and she told them. So I'm just kind of confused as to why she was, what seemed like to me for a moment, pretty deeply investigated. I just wanted to know your thoughts on that.
With Janice, I think that maybe police leaned into, you know, the fact that it took her, you know, like a day to come forward with what happened to her. And even maybe the fact that she was covered in cuts and scrapes made them think that maybe she wasn't telling the truth about what happened that night. Maybe she had been involved in some way. I'm sure the thought crossed their mind. But I feel like when she passed the two polygraph tests, she would have been in the clear. I'm not exactly sure what the stress tests would have revealed or not revealed or what that was telling police and why they did too. But I also think that maybe once they got to hypnosis, they were just trying to maybe pull out extra details from that night. Or maybe, you know, it just seems like something out of a movie, you know, a horror movie, that they were like, this can't be the truth, but here she is under hypnosis saying the same thing. So, you know, I would be curious into their thought process for everything. And, you know, when Janice turned from a suspect to a source of information and a witness. The other thing that I thought that kept coming back to my mind on this case was the second driver. It seems to me, and in my research, that police never found the person who was driving behind them that saw Janice and, you know, swerve to miss her. To me, that is something that you would very much remember, and it would be a noticeable event in your life even all these years later. So I really hope that this person does come forward eventually just to say what they know. But it also makes me wonder maybe why they haven't come forward. Were they involved in some way? Like, it really makes you wonder why somebody would not come forward to police in this situation. But that's a detail I keep coming back to, was that other driver, and just why wouldn't they come forward? But in this case, I really hope that we're able to get Terry's name out there and drum up more interest in this case. You know, her daughter-in-law is doing a wonderful job at that and has really taken charge of the case and keeping it in the local media. But hopefully, police are able to continue to review the evidence, see if DNA can be tested, if anything can be tested for DNA. I even wonder, those items that were thrown, like, you know, touch DNA, like, is that available for these things? And if not today, hopefully, you know, soon, 6 months, a year, 5 years, whatever it takes, I hope we get answers in this case. But if you know anything about the murder of Terry Howell in July of 1980, please call the Davis County Sheriff's Office at 270-685-8444. And we will have pictures of Terry and the suspect sketch up on our Instagram at Cold and Missing. If you're not following us, please follow us there. We like to keep you updated there. It's the fastest way for us to update you all. At Cold and Missing will pop right up. Like I said at the top, thank you so much for all the kind reviews. And now I can read all the international reviews out there. So if you have the time today, tomorrow, this week, if you can leave us a written review, 5 stars wherever you're at. We appreciate every rate, every review, every like, every subscribe, all of that. So thank you for doing that. And thank you because it helps the podcast. It gets other people to listen to it and it gets these cases out there. And if you're looking for other cases that we've covered, you can go to our website, www.coldandmissing.com, where they're all there. And if you need a transcript because you or your loved one is hard of hearing, you can find the official transcripts there as well. But that's all I have for you this week. Thank you so much for listening to Cold and Missing. I'm your host, Allie.
And I'm your co-host, Eli.
Have a good week and stay safe, y'all.
Stay safe, y'all.